Poor, poor Pinguinus impennis. In the sea, the bird was a sleek swimmer, its flightless stubs of wings offering seal flipper-like speed and manoeuvrability. But on land, alas, it was a very different story. Its warm down and tasty flesh made it an irresistible temptation for any passing human. Its size made it impossible to miss, and by a cruel twist of nature had made it black and white, so even easier to spot. Even worse, it laid one huge egg, and on the most precarious of rocky outcrops too. It was so easy for a freak wave, a predator, or a human interloper to destroy it. At sea it was safe, but fatefully and fatally it had come inshore to breed. Its range, which once extended to almost every shore around the North Atlantic, even around the coast of Florida and into the Mediterranean, shrank and shrank. By the turn of the 19th century, there were probably only a few hundred left. Collectors hurried to obtain a specimen or an egg before the inevitable happened. Then, in 1844, it did. What turned out to be the last breeding pair were killed on the storm-lashed island of Eldey, just off the southwest coast of Iceland. The egg, the final pair, had been nurturing, was smashed. And so the great auk joined the dodo on the list of famous extinct birds, becoming just one more sad footnote in history. But one East Anglian naturalist begged to differ. Alfred Newton, brought up at Elverdon Hall on the borders of Norfolk and Suffolk, refused to accept that this iconic bird had been swept from the planet. Born in 1829, he was just 8 days from his 15th birthday when the last great auk pair breathed their last breath. The fifth son among six boys and four girls, his well-to-do family had moved to Elverdon from their sugar plantations in the West Indies. Alfred's father, William, was MP for Ipswich and a Norfolk JP, whilst his mother, Elizabeth, was also well-connected, being the doctor of the MP for York. Sadly, Alfred's childhood at Elverdon was to be blighted by a fall from a table in the Hall's library, which left him lame and in permanent need of a stick. His passion for nature was shared by his younger brother Edward, who later joined Alfred as co-founder of the British Ornithologists' Union in 1858. When Alfred was 19, he entered Magdalen College in Cambridge, graduating in 1853. Crucially for his burgeoning passion in ornithology, he won a travelling fellowship which gave him the freedom to tour the world for 10 years studying nature. In 1855, he voyaged with his friend John Wally to northern Scandinavia and later went to the West Indies, North America and Madeira. And it was clear that The Vanished had as much appeal to the young ornithologist as the living. Edward, later Colonel Secretary of Mauritius, was able to present his brother with some bones of the long-extinct dodo, which once lived on the island. The dodo had last been seen as far back as 1662, but the great auk, well, thought Alfred, there could well be a very different story. He and John decided to travel to the islands off the southwest tip of Iceland to discover if somehow a few specimens still survived. The inaccessible Geirfuglsaker Island had been the last breeding stronghold of the great auk. But in 1830, a volcanic eruption left the island submerged, forcing the remnants of the colony, some 50 birds, to move to the nearby island of Eldey instead. Fatefully, one side of the island could be reached by boats. It was this which sealed the species' fate. In spring 1858, Alfred, now 28, set out with his friend and fellow zoologist, They waited for 2 months on the inhospitable Icelandic coast, hoping to make a landing. Frustratingly, the weather remained poor, and their chance never came. They did find a few great orc bones, though. The expedition had a sad sequel, as Wally died the following year, aged just 36. But even though it is long extinct, you can still see a great orc, and in East Anglia too. Dr. David Waterhouse, Senior Curator of Natural History and Acting Curator of Geology in the Norfolk Museum Service, looks after some remarkable great orc items. Two eggs and a taxidermy specimen, one of just 81 in the world, even though some replica pottery eggs. We thought we'd discovered another taxidermy specimen in a Norfolk attic a few years ago, but it was a really bad one made up of bits and pieces of other birds, he said. The two eggs, known as the Reeves egg and the Barclay's egg, represent about 3% of all the known great orc eggs worldwide, and as such are of immense importance to researchers. The Reeves egg on taxidermist specimens are on permanent display in the castle's Natural History Gallery. Both are enclosed in a fireproof safe for extra protection. The Reeves egg is named after a former curator who, in an incredible act of generosity, donated it on his retirement. But very few people get to see the Barclay egg, which was donated by Evelyn Barclay in 1936. I was lucky enough to get a close-up view. It is a beautiful and poignant sight, he said. There is no doubt that the story of the great orc strikes a chord through the ages. Why should this be so? David has a theory. He says, all the other extinct birds we hear about tended to be far-flung and exotic. They are quite distant geographically. But the great auk was on our doorstep. It's like the Northern Hemisphere dodo. It's too easy to blame the demands of collectors and museums for its ultimate demise, but the species was probably doomed long before then. He said, you can get below a certain number of breeding individuals, and they were never going to meet each other. You are almost literally putting all your eggs in a basket. All the time, museums and collectors get the blame for something that is a lot more complicated. But I'm not defending the people who collected the last few eggs of the great auk. We know so much more now about the ecology of the birds. For example, we also attributed the demise of the dodo to some passing sailors knocking it on the head. But we do know we need to be looking at the ecosystem, such as the introduction of pigs to the island of Mauritius. The lesson these birds give us for the future is that the whole ecosystem of the sea needs to be looked at. You have to wonder what Newton and Woolley would have made of all of this had they found a colony. You would like to think that they would have been agitated for protection rather than be swept along by that communal Victorian collecting madness, which prized a dead specimen in a museum above a live bird on a distant ocean rock. The Friends' quest was not entirely fruitless. As well as those bones, Alfred was able to talk to local fishermen who had seen the living birds. In 1861, he wrote, the orcs were easily frightened by noise, but not by what they saw. They sometimes uttered a few low croaks. They have never been known to defend their eggs, but would bite fiercely if they had the chance when caught. And did you notice the past tense? It seems by now even Alfred had given up all hope of ever seeing a live bird. He remained fascinated through his life by it. His papers bequeathed to the University of Cambridge on his death in 1907 lists 203 separate items relating to the species, including papers from his great friend Wally. There is one final twist. For it turns out the 1844 Eldi Great Auks really weren't the last after all. It is now accepted that the last great auk to be seen alive by human eyes was in 1852, when Colonel H.M. Drummond Hay, coincidentally one of Alfred's friends, saw a specimen, a single specimen, bobbing past his steamer as he headed back to Europe from America. And with that, the poor, clumsy, unlucky, ugly, beautiful, fascinating, magnificent great auk finally passed from mankind's view forever.